Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at the dangers of skin lightening, a trend that continues to raise health concerns. But first, the Red Cross voiced alarm Tuesday over the risk that fighting in the besieged DR Congo city of Goma could cause samples of Ebola and other pathogens held in a laboratory to escape. The International Committee of the Red Cross Regional Director for Africa, Patrick Youssef, said the organization was very concerned about the situation in the laboratory of the National Biomedical Research Institute, which is facing a risk of power cuts. Speaking to reporters in Geneva, he stressed the importance of preserving the samples that may be affected by the clashes, warning of, quote, unimaginable consequences if the samples, including the Ebola virus that it contains, were to spread. Youssef highlighted that the laboratory was very close to the Red Cross delegation in Goma, but he had no information about the safety of other labs in the city. United States President Donald Trump has signed an executive order to withdraw the U.S. from the World Health Organization. The move sets a 12-month notice period for the U.S. to leave the United Nations Health Agency and stop all financial contributions towards WHO. The United States is by far the organization's largest financial backer, contributing around 18% of its overall funding. WHO's most recent two-year budget for 2024 to 2025 was $6.8 billion. Observers say the U.S. departure is likely to put at risk programs across the organization. The UN Health Agency says that it regrets the move from its top donor country. Here is more with WHO's spokesperson, Tariq Jazarechev.
The World Health Organization regrets the announcement that the United States of America intends to withdraw from the organization. WHO plays a crucial role in protecting the health and security of the world's people, including Americans, by addressing the root causes of disease, building stronger health systems, and detecting, preventing, and responding to health emergencies, including disease outbreaks, and often in dangerous places where others cannot go. For over seven decades, WHO and the United States of America have saved countless lives and protected Americans and all people from health threats. Together, we ended smallpox, and together we have brought polio to the brink of eradication. American institutions have contributed to and benefited from membership in WHO. We hope the United States will reconsider, and we look forward to engaging in constructive dialogue to maintain the partnership between the United States of America and WHO for the benefit of the health and well-being of millions of people around the globe.
We turn now to skin lightening. Skin bleaching to lighten one's complexion is common around the world, but medical experts say it can be dangerous. They say skin lightening products are frequently unregulated and contain harmful ingredients like hydroquinone, mercury, and corticosteroids. In 2018, a study by the African Journal of Dermatology found that nearly 40% of women in sub-Saharan Africa have used some form of skin lightening product. The practice is common in the Democratic Republic of Congo, regardless of gender. VOA Africa's Zanim Neti Zaidi reports from Goma.
Across Africa, thousands of people are opting for a cosmetic procedure to achieve a lighter skin tone. Experts say cultural identity and societal pressure are at the root of this phenomenon, which is a significant public health problem across the continent. In the eastern part of Congo, many people have the procedure only to regret the decision later. Delphine Bindu is one of them.
When you are young and always trying to compare yourself to others, you end up making a lot of mistakes. I had a dark complexion, and I was close to a friend who was naturally brown. So I bought lotions to lighten my skin. But today I regret too much to have lost the complexion God created me with.
In many of Goma's cosmetic stores, skin lightening beauty creams are the consumer's favorite, says shopkeeper Ephraim Chirubala.
Here in Africa, many people think that using lightening products makes them clean people, but it only damages their skin. I'm convinced that black skin is much better than the brown skin that people envy.
Dr. Pascaline Ngolo is a dermatologist at the Charité Maternelle Hospital in Goma. She says parents need to educate their children about the harmful effects of skin depigmentation on human body.
We have found that there are a lot of cases of diabetes. And after analysis, we've realized that many cases come from corticoid-based lightening products. This is already a big problem. Studies have also revealed other internal complications linked to this practice, notably cases of ovarian cancer. Apart from that, there's the fragility of the skin and the whole organism.
In addition to the physical harm, skin depigmentation also has enormous mental consequences, warns psychologist Rachel Butu.
Depigmentation ends up affecting people mentally as they gradually fail to socialize with certain people who will have known them before the skin color change. They get in permanent state of stress as a result of people's many questions, and this plunges them into depression and anxiety.
Experts say in recent years, awareness campaigns have multiplied in the region against skin depigmentation, which drives many practitioners to end up in hospitals. Zane Mneti Zaidi, VOA Africa, Goma, DRC.
For more on skin lightening, we spoke with Dr. Mariam Eden, general practitioner at Hospital in Nairobi, Kenya. She discusses the dangers of skin lightening and shares some solutions.
Someone who is thinking of maybe bleaching their skin might feel like, oh, because I'm getting what I desire, that's an advantage. But when we dive into the disadvantages are very vast, from skin irritation, because of the side effects of the chemicals, harmful chemicals, because it could also lead to end organ damages. I actually had a 23-year-old who suffered from end organ damage, which was end stage renal disease, because of using chemical components since she was a teenager. So by the time we realized it was too late and we couldn't help her. For a pregnant woman who is using such products, pregnancy in itself makes the skin, more sensitive. And for someone to use these products that are already harming the skin, it will lead to more irritation, thinning of the skin, making them more susceptible to infection. It also makes them more susceptible to basically getting skin irritations and basically all sorts of skin infections. So I would advise such people to embrace their natural skin tone. Not everyone was made to be lighter. Not everyone was made to be white. You know, we all have our preferences. You know, beauty is basically in the eye of the beholder. It does not mean that just because you're not white, you're not beautiful. No, it's time to, you know, see that you're enough the way you are. You are created beautiful, and that's who you are, and you should embrace your natural beauty.
That was Dr. Mariam Eden, general practitioner at Hospital in Nairobi. Now, a clinic initiative in Kenya aims to provide health care to vulnerable mobile populations, such as truck drivers and commercial sex workers. The goal is to combat the spread of disease across borders in Africa. Juma Majonga reports from transit town of Mulongo in Kenya.
It's a beehive of activity at this health facility, made of converted shipping containers in the middle of Mulolongo, Kenya, a town on the busy Nairobi-Mombasa highway. It's one of seven such clinics located in transit towns along the Northern Corridor Highway in Kenya and 50 others across Eastern and Southern Africa. The clinics are run by the non-profit North Star Alliance. They offer healthcare to mobile populations like truck drivers and sex workers and communities that interact with them.
As they move, again, the access to quality healthcare services reduces, and that's why we have to target them and bring those services closer to them so that they are able to actually help in reducing that chain of transmission or cutting off that chain of transmission.
75-year-old Patrick has been a truck driver for nearly five decades. We are not using his real name because he wishes to remain anonymous. Patrick says he tested positive for HIV after a work trip in Botswana. He had trouble accessing his medication in some foreign countries, but now, thanks to the network of North Star Alliance clinics, he is able to get his medications across borders.
Now I can just walk into any of their clinics with my card, and once I show them, they look at it and identify my type of medicine, and they give it to me. If it is 4 or 5, they know my prescription.
To increase the reach, North Star carries out outreach services in collaboration with the communities. Eunice Mwikali runs a guest house and bar business in the area. She says the partnership between businesses like hers and the health facility has helped educate clients who are mostly truck drivers and sex workers.
For example, we advise them to use condoms, that is for protection. So we advise them to come to North Star because we have linked with them and they are offering free services. And if they're infected, we also tell them if they forgot their drugs to come to North Star, they can refill their drugs at any particular point.
North Star says it provided health services to more than 180,000 patients in the region in 2022, majority being drivers and commercial sex workers. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Mlolongo, Kenya.
The United Nations says the HIV/AIDS epidemic could be ended by 2030, but patients need to follow their treatment plans to keep the virus in check. Games could help, as Zahir Kasim reports from Johannesburg.
The white blood cell walks into the circle and flexes his muscle. But when HIV steps in, he is bound at the hands and cannot fight infections until antiretroviral drugs come to free him.
It looks like a play, but I found it very serious because now I know now what is the difference between a virus and its causes.
This program is run by the Networking HIV and AIDS Community of Southern Africa. Earlier this year, Nkosa staff completed the Bridges of Hope course, where they learned how to use games like this to teach people about the importance of following HIV treatment plans. A study in the Southern African Journal of HIV Medicine showed that these games are better than home visits alone at keeping patients on therapy.
Through participation and playing games, it's easy to remember because it's all fun and everything, while not being formal and they are there listening and sitting. So this is a different approach which actually works.
Site coordinator and trainer Sepo Sefome uses games to show participants that, with clear goals and the right support, anyone can cross the bridge to a healthier future.
If this model can be used and sustained throughout the world, I think people will start understanding things better and they would have a different perspective of certain things like taking treatment, a different perspective in terms of people that are living with HIV.
Peter Lavashia is the creator of the Bridges of Hope games. He says games cater to different learning styles and it makes it more likely the students will remember what they learn.
Yeah, it's very clear that different people have different preferred learning modalities. Some prefer visual, some auditory, some kinesthetic. So if we combine all three, then we reach everybody.
The United Nations aims to eradicate AIDS by the end of this decade. Organizers say programs like this could help ensure more people stay on life-saving treatment. Sihle Kasim, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. When we return, we'll have more on disease outbreak. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Here in the United States, the 60th presidential inauguration ceremony was held just a few days ago on January 20th, with President Donald J. Trump taking the oath as the 47th president. This week on Our Voices, we discuss the highlights of the ceremony as well as the hopes and expectations for women and girls in different spheres of life in America and around the world. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on the Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to mpox. As cases of the disease continue to spread across Africa, Kenyan health officials say they have implemented a raft of preparedness and response measures to swiftly detect and halt the viral disease's advances. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Kiama reports.
Speaking Thursday to reporters in Nairobi, health officials noted the rising number and geographic spread of mpox cases, especially from the clade 1B variant of the virus. Mary Modoni Muriuki is Kenya's principal secretary at the State Department of Public Health.
Regarding the current situation in Kenya, mpox remains a very, very big threat, not just in Kenya, but the East Africa region. In the past 1 week, we have confirmed 5 new cases. This brings the total number of mpox cases in the country to 36 from across 12 counties.
Kenya, along with Burundi, Rwanda and Uganda, have confirmed cases of the clade 1B mpox variant, which was first detected in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and is thought to be more severe and transmissible than earlier variants. The rapid spread of clade 1B was part of the reason the World Health Organization declared the mpox outbreak a public health emergency of international concern last August. With support from the WHO and other partners, Kenya has developed an mpox national preparedness and response plan. The plan has identified high-risk counties along the Northern Corridor, a busy transport route from the Kenya-Uganda border to the port city of Mombasa, and rapid response teams have been deployed to intensify surveillance. Luigi Aquino is the chief of health at UNICEF in Kenya.
The caseload of mpox in the region is very high. We are more and more exposed to acute events, which can be outbreaks or other emergencies. And I think the role of all of us is going to be crucial for a very simple reason. Disease do not spare children. And as a United Nations Children Fund, we are here to help promoting and protecting the rights of children.
As mpox cases rise across the continent, public health experts say more needs to be done to dispel myths surrounding the outbreak. Abdurrahmane Diallo is the WHO representative in Kenya.
While strides have been made in controlling the disease, one of the most persistent challenges we face is the battle against misinformation and disinformation. Misleading information about mpox has the potential to erode public trust, delay health-seeking behaviors, and fuel stigma against those affected, unfortunately.
Some of the myths say mpox only affects people in certain regions, such as the eastern DRC. Other myths involve conspiracy theories about the vaccine recently developed to fight mpox. The United States is among major donors that have committed billions of dollars to support the global response to the mpox outbreak. Mpox cases have also been found in Sweden, Thailand, the United Kingdom, Belgium, Canada, and the United States. The patients had recently traveled to Africa. Mpox is an infectious disease caused by a virus transmitted from animals to humans, with cases often found close to tropical rainforests with animals that carry the virus. It can also spread from humans to humans through close physical contact. In some cases, it can be fatal. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Sierra Leone's Minister of Information says his country is taking all necessary steps to deal with an outbreak of the mpox disease. This after the country declared a public health emergency this week after confirming 2 mpox cases in the capital, Freetown. Sierra Leone is the latest country in West Africa to report the disease after neighboring Liberia, Cote d'Ivoire and Guinea. Information Minister Chernor Ba tells VOA's James Batty that Sierra Leone is prepared for its experience with Ebola.
The Minister of Health, having consulted with His Excellency the President of the Republic of Sierra Leone, Brigadier Dr. Julius Nadabiu, made what is essentially a mandatory public health emergency. This is necessitated by the fact that we have confirmed two cases of mpox. Those two cases are within the western area vicinity, which is within our capital city. And because of those two confirmed cases, we have had the need, having consulted as well with WHO and other authorities, to declare a national public health emergency in Sierra Leone so that we can immediately activate all the necessary steps, resources, and personnel to respond to this outbreak.
So you say you have two people who have been identified with the disease. What steps has your government taken with those two individuals?
So the two individuals are currently hospitalized at the government Connaught Hospital in the capital city, and they are responding to treatment. I think one of the blessings we have in our country is that we do have experience in responding to public health outbreaks, and we have a system. We have been preparing and planning for these kinds of situations. Our president has just set up a national public health agency over the past year. So what is happening now is we have initiated our response. We have an incident action plan, which means we're doing contact tracing, ensuring that everybody that came into contact with those two cases that we have confirmed, we know where they are. We monitor them over the next couple of weeks as the protocol is required. And then the reason we did the public declaration is so that we can also equip our hospitals, make sure that we engage communities as we're doing now with our ministry and the public health agency and the Ministry of Health, make sure that our communities are on high alert.
Minister, you mentioned Sierra Leone's experience with the Ebola. There are reports that this mpox was also in Liberia, Cote d'Ivoire, and Guinea. How concerned?
In fact, in part of our response plan, one of the major areas we're looking at is how do we ensure cross-border control, but also coordinating with our sister countries in the sub-region. What we know from these outbreaks is that once one country is affected, we know that, you know, despite our best efforts, it's very likely that it will affect the neighboring country. So because of that experience, as you said, there have already been reported cases in Liberia, in Guinea. We were on high alert. We'll be monitoring our borders. What we're doing now is to step that up and ensure that the response mechanism we have put in place, the experience that we have with community mobilization, with engaging our citizens, with making sure that we beat disinformation and misinformation, which is often what comes up with these kinds of things, beating back stigma and making sure people are not afraid, again, thinking that, oh, it's some terrible thing that they should be afraid to even come forward for. Because of all of those experiences, we believe that we're in a very good position to respond to this outbreak with the cooperation of our citizens, and it's something that we'll defeat very soon.
Tusaiwe Mukondia knows what it's like to feel alone in the world. She was abandoned by her mother at age 6 and raised by her grandmother. She now rescues abandoned babies, vulnerable children, and teen mothers in Malawi. Chimwemwe Padata has this report.
25-year-old Tusaiwe Mukondia knows how it feels to be abandoned. She was left by her mother at the age of 6 and had her own child at the age of 16. Mukondia is now on a mission to share the love she says she never received as a child.
We provide shelter, food, like any type of support that a mother or a father provides to their children. That's what we do.
Mukondia established You Are Not Alone, Oyana in Mzuzu, Malawi's northern region, providing care and support to around 200 children. Her organization offers a home to abandoned orphaned children, some with disabilities and the elderly. She is also building a technical college where young mothers can continue their education after completing secondary school.
We want our children to go to college. But if they struggle to go to some colleges because of maybe a disability or a challenge, we're building a technical college for them so that they can be able to learn a skill that can support them to be independent.
16-year-old Debola Magalasi, an orphan, has spent 6 months at Yana after being rescued from Cheo District, about 500 kilometers away from the center.
There were some problems that I have been meeting when I was in my home village. I was lacking school fees. So my mom and dad have passed away. Only one person I have in my life is only my grandmom.
Some community members around the city of Mzuzu say the YANA initiative has had a positive impact. Mangaliso Tuba is one of the community members.
We have seen that the improvement now is going on forward because we have seen the children are learning. We have got nursing school. So these are the things now we are benefiting here.
Malawi currently has one of the highest teenage pregnancy rates in sub-Saharan Africa at 29%, according to the UN. Lack of parental care and support. Emma Garia, the executive director of the Malawi Human Rights Resource Center, says is driving many children to the streets.
Secondly, it is about parental care. There are some people who have children who they don't take care of. You have children, you disappear as a father, and then you think you don't even mind where you left your children. That is what is causing most of these problems that we are seeing. Fathers who are absent, even mothers who may want to be absent.
In recent years, Malawi has passed several laws to protect children, including the National Strategy to End Child Marriage in 2024. Additionally, Justin Hamera, the Deputy Director for Children's Affairs, said the government has introduced a parenting program to educate parents on children's rights and support initiatives like Munkodia's. Chimwemwe Padata, VOA Africa, Mzuzu, Malawi.
The UN Child Protection Agency, UNICEF, is warning that child abuse is worsening for thousands of children and women in conflict-ravaged areas of the DRC. Ramato Touré, UNICEF's DRC Chief of Child Protection, told VOA's Chinedu Ofor that the year is beginning on a grim note.
Unfortunately, we have seen in the new year that, especially in the eastern part of the country, that the situation has further deteriorated, and we are seeing now massive displacement, but also violence for children. What this conflict means for children in those regions is basically three things. It means first that they are at the risk of being separated from their families. Then the second risk is they are at risk, of course, of recruitment by armed group. But also women and girls and also boys actually are at increased risk of sexual violence.
And talking of sexual violence, I know this is one area that is of most concern to you and to the international community. What is the current situation?
The current situation is actually twofold. On one side, we've seen from last year, especially, a tremendous partnership, tremendous efforts in the DRC to prevent and respond to sexual violence, especially to prevent and respond to sexual violence against girls and against children, which have brought a large coalition from government counterparts, from our partners, from UNICEF. Obviously, we are at the forefront of those efforts to prevent and respond concretely to the plight of sexual violence. But we are also seeing, of course, that those crimes continue, and especially in the areas that are affected by the conflict. So right now we are at a crossroad in the DRC where basically there is awareness that sexual violence is highly prevalent. We do have the mechanisms and the tools because we know how to prevent it. We know how to respond to it. So what we are doing now is scaling up and expanding our services, expanding the different coalitions, the different partnerships, and expanding our programs to be able to respond better, but also more importantly, to be able to have the seeds of long-lasting prevention against sexual violence.
Last year, you held a conference where you brought several parties to the table to discuss especially enforcement of sexual violence crimes against women and children. How is that working out, and is it even possible to enforce it?
Last year, we had this major conference. Actually, it was the first national conference against violence against children in the DRC, and it was focused mainly on sexual violence. One of the areas that we're looking at is indeed the fight against impunity.
And that's all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu in Washington, with producer Kwame Ofori. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.